Trying to find where we are. Could it be 80.2? Sorry, your window.
80.2.
Yeah, 80.2. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Well, let's see. What have we been talking about? Okay, it is in the personality of Godhead that the absolute truth, Brahman, is fully manifested. In other words, Krishna, or the personality of Godhead, is the full manifestation of the absolute truth. It's the same reality, it's just given two different names and looked at in two different ways. That's what we've been discussing so far in this Anucheda. So continuing, 80.2. But it's already functioning. Oh, what is it? It is. It's working. Tasma drishter asamyak samyaktvat satyapi samyaktve tad anusandhanadva ekasmin adhikarini ekadeshena spurad ekapeda parasmin akondataya dvitiyo bedaha. Therefore, although the reality is complete, the capacity of various candidates to see it may be complete or not. It differs according to the capacity of the candidate who's trying to realize the absolute truth. Or else, they may not be given proper attention to. They may not give, I'm sorry, let me say it again. Or else they, the candidates, the people who are trying to realize, may not give proper attention to its completeness, the completeness of Brahman. Okay. And so, what's the difference? Well, different capacities and different paying attention. You may have the capacity to realize, but you may not bother to do it. You may realize only partial aspect of the Supreme and not realize the whole thing, either out of incapacity or out of inattentive or laziness. And so, therefore, in one variation, the Supreme appears as a partial manifestation to one candidate, and in another form, it appears completely to another. Now, we're thinking about Brahman, impersonal Brahman, as a partial manifestation. That doesn't mean that Brahman is something less than 100%, but we mean that it's the absolute truth without its qualities. It's not that some chunk of the absolute is missing, only half of it's there. No, it's all there, but it's there without its qualities. That's what's incomplete. Qualityless Supreme. The qualities are there, but we're not looking at them. We don't see them, because we can't see them, or we don't bother to look at them. Then we call it impersonal Brahman. Okay, continuing. Evam sati yatra vishesham vinaiva vastunak spurtik sadvishtir asampurna yata brahmakarena. This being so, there being two different features, Brahman and Bhagavan, according to the different ways people look at the Supreme. This being so, we can conclude that that vision is incomplete. This is incomplete vision, in which the reality appears without variety, as in the form of Brahman. And that vision is complete. Yatra swarupa bhuta nana vaichitri vishesha varakarena sa sampurna yata shri bhagavad akareneti labhyate. And that vision is complete, in which the reality appears in a form individualized by many innate varieties, as in the form of the personality of Godhead. That may be obvious to us, but the Mayavadis think it's the other way around, that the Bhagavan realization is incomplete because it's polluted by duality, and the Brahman realization is complete. They have it backwards. They agree that Brahman and Bhagavan are the same, because the Mayavadis, their idea is everything is Brahman. Nothing exists that isn't coming from Brahman. That's not what we're disagreeing about. We're disagreeing about which is the complete, which is the real one. Commentary, just one sentence, two sentences. Because it does not display the Supreme's qualities, Brahman is said here to be a partial manifestation of the Supreme, even though it is without bound in all dimensions. It is complete, but seen incompletely. The other thing is, it is complete. The qualities are there, just nobody's looking at them. Okay. Yeah, Nitya, you had your... You were asking first, yeah.
The previous first statement is...
80.1? That's Brahman. Oh boy, may that be confusing.
Yeah, absolute truth.
We're using Brahman in the generic sense, the absolute truth.
Yeah, okay.
Personal and impersonal.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not like Krishna's totally impersonal.
Yeah.
Okay. It may be confusing throwing the word Brahman around with in two different ways to mean impersonal. But I try to distinguish and call it impersonal Brahman when we're talking about the impersonal.
Like it.
Well, that's awkward to always be adding brackets and parentheses. Well, I mean, you could suggest that we avoid using Brahman in an ambiguous sense, you know, and use it one way or the other, either impersonal Brahman or absolute truth in general. But it's not just us, it's all the, you know, the Puranas, the Upanishads, and all the Acharyas, they do that also. They mix up the two meanings. So it doesn't help that much if we set a standard, because already they're doing it both ways. Everyone else is doing it both ways.
Okay.
All our predecessors. We'll just have to get used to it. The Brahman means the absolute truth in general, and sometimes it means the impersonal feature in particular. We just have to understand from context.
Yeah. And really,
yes.
The commentary on this text which we read today, is it Bhagavan,
Vichara,
and Brahman are not different, they're
the
same, complete.
No, I'm sorry, where are you reading this from?
Therefore, the reality is complete, the capacity of translation.
Oh, today's, okay, yes.
Yeah. The capacity of various candidates to see it may be complete or not.
Yes.
So, is it if somebody can see Brahman with qualities, will they, for them, is it no different between Bhagavan and Brahman? Is it absolute oneness of Brahman and Bhagavan?
It is absolute oneness. Somebody who becomes a Krishna conscious realizer of Bhagavan should understand that Brahman is identical with Krishna. But there's no differences. There's no different absolute. There's only one absolute truth. Two different absolute truths, or more, many. But in that one absolute truth, there's variety. He's got his different sides, his different features, his different qualities. So that's a mystery how that is. He's one without a second, but in him there's variety. Because they're spiritual varieties, spiritual qualities. So in terms of that, Bhagavan is where is when you see all those qualities, and when you don't see any qualities, you're seeing Brahman, impersonal Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
But Brahman and Bhagavan are the same. The difference is how you look at them.
So it is the same and different.
Yeah, you could say that. That there's variety inside the Supreme. Well, like Krishna and his flute are the same and also different. Or even Krishna and his arms are identical. Krishna's not different from his body, but there's a variety. There's something you can see different in Krishna and in his arms. You know, there's apparent difference. There's transcendental variety. But it's not like you are actually different from your body. Krishna's not different from his body, but there's still variety there. Devotees are not satisfied to have Krishna without his body, just disembodied Krishna. They don't want that.
Then, if that is the case, why we, like for example, Mahadeva Puri, when he was leaving his body, his disciples came and spoke about Brahman, he felt disgusted. And if it is one reality, and those who are self-realized can see them as Advaita.
Well, there's nothing wrong with the idea. You mean like Mahadeva Puri?
Maybe
it's just not liking not like, you know, to be disgusted by not giving your attention to Krishna's qualities. Why are you talking about Krishna and ignoring his qualities? What do you think he is anyway? A void? So that's abhorrent to a devotee, to not talk about Krishna's qualities. It's not that Brahman has got a, you know, bad smell or, you know, it's disgusting, but that Krishna without his qualities is not, it doesn't, you know, Krishna, the devotees don't like to see Krishna without his qualities. And then it was, who was it? Ramachandra Puri?
Yeah.
And Madhavendra Puri? At the moment, you know, on his deathbed, he told them, why aren't you meditating on Brahman? Mm-hmm. And that really disgusted Madhavendra Puri. But that was because it was very inappropriate attitude on the part of the disciple. Not that there's something disgusting about the idea that the absolute truth is supreme and we should meditate. There's nothing wrong with that. But the attitude with which the disciple presented that idea was totally, totally inappropriate. He's experiencing the ecstasy of separation from Radha and Krishna, and you tell him, you know, this impersonal theory, it's not appropriate. That's inappropriateness of rasa. There's nothing wrong with the tattva, with the philosophical content, but the mood in which it was presented was totally wrong. So we don't hate, you know, the philosophy that's taught in the Upanishads. It's fine, but it has its proper place. It's rasa bas, and to introduce it in the middle of the rasa dance. Yes?
So about noted that the beginning of the Krishna only when he, by his energies, allows us to see him. So does it mean that we have some particular mood or desire to see some particular creature, and because of that, his energy is at the same day, they make him appear to us the corresponding form?
According to our desire?
According to our capability or...
Yes. Yeah, devotees who actually have... See, if you have prema bhakti, this is the power of prema bhakti, immature bhakti. But fully mature prema bhakti has the power to control Krishna. And it'll make him appear in a certain way, according to the desire of the devotee. If the devotee has prema bhakti.
And in case you don't have prema and you want to see the Lord and his paramount teacher, so in the same way his energy can facilitate so you could see him in the teacher paramount. Is it what you say?
Devotees want to see Brahma?
No, not only devotees, practitioner.
Yes.
So he has some capability to see
only Brahma. Two things. He only has the capacity to see that much, and he also is not interested in seeing more. His attention, you know, his interest is not in anything more. Mm-hmm. Therefore, Krishna shows himself as Brahman. But it's Krishna showing himself. By Krishna's energies that we can see Krishna without energies. It's by Krishna's energies that we can see Brahman without any energies. We don't see any energy, but it's the energies that makes it possible for us not to see the energies.
Because Krishna is Krishna.
Because it's energy of cognition, the energy of awareness is given to us. So we can think, so we can imagine that Krishna doesn't have any energies. But it's his energy that makes us, that lets us think like that.
Does it mean that his energy, they cover our vision so that we cannot see Krishna completely?
Some of the energies cover, some of the energy uncover. Mm-hmm. You know, there are energies that reveal the truth and other energies that hide it.
Mm-hmm. So they, it's like they cover Krishna, then they got these energies and then
Okay, but it's not always covering in the sense of hiding. It's, it can be the opposite. It can be revealing. See, it's another mystery. You can only, and Jiva Goswami discusses this in the Krishna Siddhartha. Theoretically, yes, you can only know Krishna through his energies. So the argument may be, well, that means we can't know Krishna directly. We never know him directly. We never have a direct relationship with him, because it's all through his energies. But Jiva Goswami says, yes, theoretically you can argue like that, but actually, you know, Krishna has a way of giving his direct contact and revealing himself directly, even though the energies are working. That his devotees, his pure devotees, have direct personal relationship with him, and he is directly revealing himself. Even though that seems logically to be impossible, it seems like you can't have a direct relationship with him, according to all logic, but it goes beyond. Krishna can transcend that logic and reveal himself directly. That's what Jiva Goswami is talking about, says later on in the Krishna Siddhartha. Yeah, because that's the job of his energies, to reveal or sometimes conceal him. How are you going to know? What means do you have to know Krishna or anything else? You have powers of perception, but those powers of perception are Krishna's energies. You, the eyes you have in your head, and your brain, and your mind, those are energies in you. You're an energy of Krishna. So what to speak of the capacities you have, you yourself are an energy of Krishna. So you, the knowing self, can only know because you're an energy of Krishna. So the energies are behind everything, behind all knowledge, all activity, everything. Yeah, like that. So, the sage who has realized impersonal Brahman is praying at the end of the Ishopanishad that your face is covered by this effulgence, please remove it. It's just that vision is one particular way of realizing. It's a particular sense. Yeah, you can see, you can also taste, you can hear. So realization can be through any of these channels. You know, vision is one of the channels of realization. If we're talking about vision literally, or if you're talking about vision figuratively, just vision in general, even, you know, even hearing can be considered a kind of vision in a poetic way. Then it's no difference. Realizing and visualizing, if you don't mean only using your eyes, then it's the same thing, no difference. Otherwise, if you're strict about it, vision means with the eyes, then it's a particular kind of realization, one channel. Well, but when they talk about God, God is not the real Brahman. God is an illusion created out of Brahman. You can see the illusion. You can see personality of Godhead. You can see God, but that God is Maya. It's a product of Maya, according to the Mayavadis. That's why they're Mayavadis, because they say that Krishna is Maya. Because you can see it, it must be Maya. We don't agree with that. No, we can see it. He has no qualities, but he has spiritual qualities, and we can see them. He has no material qualities. Yeah.
Brahmavadis, what do you think about the form of the Lord?
Brahmavadis is opposed to Mayavadis?
I heard that Mayavadis are offenders towards Krishna, but
yes.
Brahmavadis, they are impersonalists.
Well, Mayavadis are a particular school, following Shankaracharya. And there may be in history other schools that are very similar, that have basically the same philosophy. The Buddhists are almost the same philosophy. But Brahmavadi is a very general term. It can be anybody who's realizing the Supreme impersonally, and so how and what they're seeing, realizing can vary. It's not one particular school of philosophy, Brahmavad. So it depends on the individual, it depends on which Brahmavadi you're talking about.
What I meant to ask is that the Vaishnavas, they say that the personal aspect of the Lord is higher than the impersonal aspect.
Yes.
But there may be other classes who say that the impersonal aspect is higher than the personal aspect.
They may say that, or they may never considered the question. Maybe they just not, haven't thought it out and even considered which one of them is higher. Maybe they say, I've heard about this personal aspect, I've seen the deities in the temple and everyone's going to worship the deity, but I'm attracted to Brahman realization. And he didn't really think out, which one is really supreme? He just never asked the question. Brahmavadis, they're basically naive, they just haven't figured everything out yet. But when one makes a decision, no, Krishna is inferior, because he has a form, then you're a Mayavadi. Okay. Where are we? Okay, we're up to 80.3. Let's try moving ahead. Tade tadabhipretya pratamam drishti taratam yena tadabhivyakti taratamyam tadmaha purana avyambhava karanabhyam prashnotarabhyam pratipadyate shadbhihi. Sri Narada Uvacha, where is this? Let's see. Find the reference for this. 6. This is Bhagavatam's first canto. Oh. Yeah, 5th chapter, 1st canon. Sri Narada Uvacha Jigasitam Aditam Cha Brahma Yattat Sanatanam Tatapi Shochashyat Manam Akritartha Iva Prabhu. Sri Vyasa Uvacha Tvam Paryatan Narka Iva Trilokim Antascharo vayurivatma sakshi paravare brahmani dharmato vratai snatasya minyunabalam vichakshva. Meaning to express this, the gradation of the reality's manifestations is first established in terms of gradation of vision. Gradations of the manifestations of the reality, not differences of the reality, but differences of how the reality is revealed, is established in terms of gradation of vision, the different ways that people look at him or see him. And this is expressed by a question and an answer, which resulted in the appearance of this greatest of Puranas. In other words, Narada asks the question, Vyasa gives an answer. And this leads into Narada telling Vyasa to meditate and compose the Bhagavatam. So, 6 verses. So I guess we're going to discuss all 6 verses. These are the first 2 verses. Narada said, talking to Vyasa, you have inquired into the internal reality Brahman and have realized it. But still you are lamenting for yourself, my dear Prabhu, as if your life was a failure. So he's calling, Narada is calling Vyasa Prabhu. Prabhu in the verse. What are you talking about? When did Vyasadeva inquire into the eternal reality?
When he compiled the
Well, no, more specifically, Tato Brahmagyasa, when he wrote the Vedanta Sutra. This is talking actually about his compiling the Vedanta Sutra. Tato Brahmagyasa, now let us inquire into the Absolute Reality. Vyasa said, like the sun, your goodness can travel everywhere in the three worlds. And like the air, you can penetrate the internal region of everyone. As such, you are as good as the all-pervading super soul. Please therefore find out the deficiency in me. Despite my being absorbed in transcendence, both its superior and inferior form, by following religious principles and strict vows. Oh, that's not Vyasa asking Narada to follow vows. He's saying that I'm deficient, even though I was absorbed, I became absorbed by my following vows and religious principles, right? I'm fixed up in Dharma because I followed all the rules. Still, I have this doubt, so please dispel the doubt. Now, what does it mean that you're, you can go everywhere like the sun and you're inside everybody like the air? What does he mean by that? Well, Narada can travel around. He also goes inside people's bodies?
It's like an image poetic.
What is it actually saying then? Well, how is he an external manifestation of Paramatma? Okay, but what can a spiritual master do that makes him a representative of Paramatma? Okay, but he's on the outside, but what? Well, we know what Paramatma does on the inside. Does the spiritual master do the same thing from the outside? One thing is he sees right into the heart of the disciple. He can perceive what's actually going on inside the disciple's heart. It's not that he, by some physical mystical power, he goes, you know, inside the body. Maybe some guru can do that, but it's not normal. Normal is that he has the insight. He can perceive in his mind. He can feel and understand what the disciple is actually thinking and feeling. That's what it means. He doesn't actually, you know, drill a hole and enter inside. Yes?
And it also means that
he's
like a super soul.
And super soul tells him.
Yeah, super soul tells him what's going
on. Okay, that's how the insight works. He's got insight because super soul is talking to him. Yes. Oh. Yes. Both ways, externally, internally. Okay. Spiritual master, to do his job, he needs some inspiration from inside. Because if every time he needs to have an answer, he has to go to his spiritual master, that's going to be an endless chain of regression. You know, every time you ask a question to the spiritual master, he's going to have to ask the question to his spiritual master, and all the way down the line. No, Krishna gives an answer inside the heart to make it unnecessary to send an infinite amount of email messages. Okay. And a mature disciple can get answers in his heart, too, without bothering the spiritual master with an email message. Okay. We read commentary on this? Even after Vyasadeva finished editing the Vedas for study and ritual use in this Kali Age. See, that's what the Vedas are for. Because they're not just there for us. They're not just a commodity to be exploited. But they do serve purposes in our lives. The things that people, human beings, do with the Vedas is they study them. Just study them for their own sake. It gives you enlightenment. It gives you pleasure. It's an education in itself just to study the Vedas, to memorize and recite the Vedas. That's called Swadhyaya. And the other use of the Vedas is to perform yajñas. You get the mantras out of the Vedas and chant the mantras in the sacrifice. And the Vedas also describe how to set up and perform the sacrifice. Okay, so Vyasadeva finished editing the Vedas for study and ritual use in this Kali age. In the previous ages, people didn't have to get such elementary instruction. They could figure things out. You know, given the materials, they can figure out what to do. But in Kali Yuga, people are confused, so you have to tell them, hold their hands and tell them step by step what to do. So Vyasadeva arranged the Vedas so people could study them and use them in sacrifice in Kali Yuga. But he's, even after doing that, he felt that his work was still not complete. As he was pondering his insufficiency, his spiritual master Narada appeared unannounced, as he usually does, and quickly identified the problem. Vyas, Vyas had already guessed at it, that he, that he had not given enough attention to glorifying the personality of Godhead. Vyasadeva already mentioned it before Narada came. Maybe I haven't given enough attention to glorifying the Supreme Lord Vasudeva. That's there in the fourth chapter, before Narada arrives. He already guessed. But Narada, in addition, strongly urged him to meditate on the Supreme Lord in preparation for writing Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what the spiritual master contributed, that he hadn't already guessed, that you better compose the Bhagavatam and do some serious meditating in preparation for that. Okay, continuing. Narada's talking now. Actually, Vyasadeva spoke three verses. Two of them are skipped here. And now Narada speaks. Sri Narada Vacha Bhavadanudita Prayam Yasho Bhagavato Malam Yenaiva Saunatushyeta Manyeta Darshanam Pilam Naishkarmyam apyachuta pavarjitam Nishobate gyanamalam niranjanam Putapunat shashvarabhadram ishvare Nacharpitam karma yadapyakaranam Namo bhagavate tubhyam Vasudevaya dhimahi Pradyumnaya nirudhaya Namak Sankarshanaya cha Iti murta abhidhanena Mantra murti mamurtikam Yajate yagya purusham Sasamyam darshanam puman. Those last two verses are 20 verses ahead. There's about almost 20 verses are skipped in between toward the end of the chapter. Sri Narada said, but altogether, six verses are quoted here. Two from the beginning, two a little bit later, and two from the end of the chapter. Sri Narada said, you have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. That philosophy which does not satisfy the Lord is considered worthless. The Sanskrit word is kilam. Insufficient. The Prabhupada rendered that as worthless. What does the word akila mean? Complete. So, really, kila means it can mean an appendix to a book. It's called a kila. So an appendix is also means something missing. So when nothing's missing, it's called akila. No missing part, complete. But kila means insufficient. Something's missing. Yeah?
A place of waste or a
Oh yeah, well, yeah, an empty, yeah, like a desert or an empty space,
the
wilderness.
Remainder.
And so in books, it means the appendix of a book, the additional material in the back. Yeah. Well, ocula doesn't mean no desert. It means no missing part.
Yeah, this kila word comes in Bhagavad Bhagavatam as well. This Janmeja is telling Janmeja,
yeah.
He told Mahabharata, and then Janmeja asks, do you have any kila? Like, you have some
appendix.
Appendix.
Yes, extra part.
And then he does Bhagavad Bhagavatam.
Yes. That's kila. That doesn't mean something wrong, it means something additional, extra part. Okay, did we read all these verses, or did we stop in the middle here? Okay, so Narada continues. Realization of the truth beyond material work, even though free from all material affinity, does not look well if devoid of a conception of the infallible personality of Godhead. What then is the use of fruitive activities, even obligatory ones, if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord? After all, they are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature. Let us fix our intelligence by offering obeisances unto you, O Personality of Godhead Vasudev. Obeisances also to Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Samkarsana. He sees with complete vision, who thus worships in the form of transcendental sound representation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vishnu, who has no material form. Okay. So there Narada is telling the same diagnosis of the problem that Vyasa had already guessed by himself, almost the same words, that he hadn't given much attention to describing the glories of the personality of Godhead. So, and then Narada says, you know, anything else, any other spiritual endeavor is inadequate without that. And then he describes how to glorify the Lord just by chanting his names in the other two verses. So, there's no commentary there. Any questions? No? Yes, sir. Well, here it says, yes, he says that the mantra is a deity form. So even if you don't have any deity, you can worship the mantra as your deity. That's what Narada is promoting here. Not, it's not against deity worship, but this is an alternative method. Just chant, just Samkirtan, just chant the names. And those names are forms of the Lord, Murtis. Okay. And then it says also in Murti coming, he has no material body, no material form. Yes?
This was not so much about the translation. We have four verses, and in the translation from three paragraphs. So it's, for example, the Communion translation, and it's a very short translation. So when you combine the last two verses.
Last two verses put together?
Yeah.
Well, I can separate them. Sure. I just did it. Okay. I split it up into the third one into two pieces. Okay. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, well, even though, I don't know, I've wondered also. I can only start guessing. I haven't even done much guessing about it, so maybe I shouldn't just jump right into guessing. Even if not going to use them, they should be there for reference. Now there are, we know in the history of Kali Yuga that there are people studying the Vedas. There still are some. And they're not all just bogus. The Brahmins in South India were still, little boys are going to Gurukul and memorizing Vedas. It's still going on to some extent. Yes? But you can ask, well, what's so important about it, you know? What great spiritual purpose is served by those little boys memorizing the Vedas? Yes?
I have knowledge there is no complete version of Veda.
See, there are many shakas, many different versions of each Veda. So many of the versions are missing. But we have a lot, we have a whole library full of books that aren't missing. Upstairs in our collection we have about 100 volumes of Vedas, different shakas. So it's not, you know, it's not like, you know, chapters are missing, but alternative versions are not all there. There is enough Vedas still there for someone to study. There are people studying them. But they're not becoming very Krishna conscious by doing that. It's not a solid basis for your real spiritual life in Kali Yuga. Because people don't understand them, they don't care to understand, they're not interested in devotion to the Supreme. So with all their Vedic study, they don't accomplish anything spiritual. Still leaves the question, why did Bhagavad Vyasadev take so much trouble to make an edition of books that aren't useful? Good question. But the Vedas are the original authority. Even if we, see, Vedas are not just there for us. They're not just there for us to study, you know, to chant for our benefit. They're not just there to use for making yajnas. They're not something for our exploitation. They're not even there for, mainly for us to understand. A lot of things in the Vedas no human being will never, ever understand. Maybe the demigods can understand a lot of it, but human beings, it's not written for human beings, the Vedas. It's just there. It's the manifestation of the Supreme. You know, maybe there's a deity somewhere hiding in the bushes that nobody's worshipping. You ask, well, why is the deity there? Well, it's Vishnu. That's his pastime, to be hiding in the bush. And so the Vedas are there, even if nobody can study them. The Vedas deserve to be manifested in every age, even when there's nobody there to properly understand them. They're not just there for us, not even just there for us to understand. And a lot of it, no human being will ever understand. The Vedas are there to be respected as the highest authority, even if we can't understand what they're saying. Yes? Vedic culture, based on the Vedas.
Yeah, so why are we speaking about Vedic culture, not about Bhagavad culture?
But we have to understand what that means. Because to some people that may sound very strange. Because you Hare Krishnas claim you're promoting Vedic culture, and probably not one of you know more than a few words of any Vedas. You know, most of you don't even know what's in the Vedas. So what are you Vedic? What's Vedic about you? But it is correct, although it has to be explained how it is. Because we're Vedic indirectly. We're Vedic through the Bhagavatam. All the essence of the Vedas is there in the Bhagavatam. Really, not just we're claiming that, very substantially, very thoroughly, the teachings of the Vedas are embodied in the Bhagavatam. And on that basis, we can rightfully claim to be Vedic. But unless we explain that, we start throwing the word Vedic around, it'll just sound funny to anybody who knows what the word's supposed to mean. We have to explain that. We can claim to be Vedic because of because we're students and teachers of the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, we can't claim it. Yes?
Maybe also because we have trained to worship service, Krishna became eligible.
Someone locked in his room? Can you check? Isn't it yours? Locked in his room? Oh, this door. Okay. Study the Vedas. Yeah. Okay, but not at the cost of Bhagavatam. You know, like, we made this school centered around Bhagavatam. Not some devotees, I won't mention names, think we should have a school centered around the Vedas. You know, chant Vedic mantras, because that's really Vedic. But it's not relevant to us. What is it going to do for us, sitting around chanting Vedic mantras? We could do that in addition. Someone in our, you know, academic, ISKCON academia, someone could be an expert on the Vedas. But it's like, for us, it's a minor specialty. It's not the essential thing. Yes. It has its place. We, our actual involvement with the Vedas is mostly in terms of the Upanishads. Our acharyas use the Upanishads as evidence to explain their teachings, because the Upanishads have Vedic authority. But we don't see quotations from the Rig Veda so much. Once or twice in the Sandarbhas, there's something quoted from the Rig Veda. But Upanishad quotes, you see plenty of them in Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas. So that's our actual use of the Vedas, is to help explain our philosophy and give heavy authority to it, because it's Shruti. Yes. And then we talk about Vedic culture, Varnashram Dharma. But that's also indirectly based on the Vedas. Although everything about Varnashram, you can find that in the Vedas. All the facts about how society should be organized is obtainable in the Vedas, but indirectly. But unsystematically. But the same knowledge originally taught in the Vedas about organizing human society is systematized in the Dharma Shastras, which are based on the Vedas. So we get our understanding of Varnashram from Manusmriti and other Dharma Shastras. It's, again, indirectly Vedic. No, Pancharatras don't teach those complicated rituals. Pancharatras teach deity worship, mantra meditation, and, you know, different rituals go along with that. The fire sacrifices are taught in the Vedas. So those who are performing fire sacrifices are supposed to be following the Vedas. Some of them are, and some of them are just concocting, to different degrees. Even the best aren't following 100% strictly. But some of them make a serious attempt to follow the actual instructions of the Vedas, the real mantras. Very rare to find those who are actually performing these complex rituals faithfully. There are a few. As the years go on, less and less. It'll disappear soon. The actual performance of Vedic rituals. Probably within our lifetimes, there won't be any more. Yes?
Question that she will make an attempt to preserve this magic voice.
Any volunteers? I don't want to do it.
It's very difficult. Question that is important to do it with the
Well, maybe, practically. Suppose we take that as our responsibility, make sure the Vedic rituals don't disappear altogether. Probably it would be adequate to record them. You know, and some of that's been done already. You know, record the actual performance of the rituals and preserve the books. What are we going to do otherwise? A devotee go and spend 48 years studying Vedic rituals? And I think nobody in ISKCON should spend his life studying Vedic rituals. It's for an academic specialist, and there are people, there are non-devotees who are ready to do that, get paid for it. So I don't think our ISKCON devotees need to do that, to become full-time ritualists. Or ritual scholars of rituals. That's even worse. It's bad enough to be a ritualist. Double bad to be a scholar of rituals. You know, so let the karmis do that. And we'll take advantage of it. It's like Professor Fritz Stahl, who argued with Prabhupada, that booklet was printed back in 1969. You know that book? It's Fritz Stahl, a professor in California, had a debate with Prabhupada and was printed by BBT. Later, in 1975, he did research on the Agni Chayana 11-day Soma sacrifice. The last time it was ever performed in 1975. It probably will never be performed again in Kali Yuga because it's so complicated. He recorded the whole thing, made a huge book out of it with videotapes of all the 11-day rituals. So he did it. Let him do it. He did the work. You know, he can argue with Prabhupada and then do the work for us and we can take advantage of it. The book is there. I don't think we didn't buy a copy. It's still available at Multilal Banarsi Das. Maybe we should buy a copy. Book with videotapes. And then you can sit down and study, you know, the research he did. He spent years doing it and we can study his results. Let the karmis do it. Okay, we'll stop now. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Ha ha ha.